with a quote. It's by Christopher Robin. You're braver than you believe and stronger than you seem and smarter than you think. Quotes such as these are such a wonderful way to build confidence in our children. I feel this will help your child tap into their inner power and feel great about themselves. Small morning self-help rituals help start your child's day to a good start and boost their morale. As you may all know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. We on our show will be focusing on ways to help listeners better understand the severity and the inclining issue of mental illness. Please give a warm welcome to our wonderful guests, Dr. Collins, and of course, oh my God, Mehtab. Mehtab, I've seen you so many times, and it just like went like brain bang. Sorry. Hi, Mehtab, and hi, Dr. Collins.
Hello.
I'm just going to give a little, why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay.
Yes, please do.
Nice. I am Dr. Brittany Collins. I am the director of the Youth Mental Health Program at the Rupani Foundation, and I am excited to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. And Mehtab, you don't need an introduction, but we'll let you introduce yourself, too. Our listeners
like
know
I'm,
you.
I want to say I'm my kid's mom at this point. I like that one.
I love that.
That's the one that makes me more proud. Anyway. No, I'm here with actually recently with the I forgot to post about this, but now I'm in the executive team at the Rupani Foundation.
Wow! Congratulations.
So I'm super super excited to have Dr. Collins on our team, yes. And now I have some insider scoop on the programs and what you know I can kind of nudge a little bit with like. Where funding should go, so that excites
me. That's awesome.
And to get people like her, and I'm still on cloud nine coming from my niece's UT graduation, and being a Longhorn, I'm a little biased. I know. When they told me you graduated from UT, I'm like, it's like we're the same religion.
Sisters.
You pray to the same clock. I use the clock so I don't get lost. You know?
You're so
I'm
cute.
So excited yes. that you're on our team.
Yes,
so.
Me as well.
Aww.
And thank you guys for keep inviting me back, even though I'm all over
you
the
can't
place.
Get rid of us now. You're on the clock.
Good.
We love you. So let's begin with some questions. Please give us some examples of mental health stigmas in children.
Ooh. I believe a lot of times people look at children who are suffering from mental illnesses and they'll call them slow, they'll call them stupid, they'll call them bad, yeah. And that they're difficult to work with. And I mm-hmm. think that those are some stigmas mm-hmm. that really stick with children. And it impacts the way that they think, it impacts the way that they behave and the trajectory of their life. And so I know we have to be very careful with those.
Yeah. There are trigger words and yeah. you don't want to use those, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what are false myths and misunderstandings does stigma perpetuate in young children?
That it's hard to work with them, that they're yeah. never going to get better. Those are all myths. I think that there's a lot of great scientific interventions that are available to children and their families to help them, whether it's in the community or even in the homes, to help prepare them to be able to excel in life.
Yeah.
And I think that these stigmas are just coming from an ignorant place, just the unknown, not knowing yeah. what to do with the behaviors and the symptoms that they are occurring, you know, and so I think it's just a matter of education at this point.
Yeah, I think in both ways, like especially with parents too, like that are from underserved communities, I feel like they need to know more and be educated on topics such as these.
Yeah,
well, I think that's one of the things that excites me about the work of Rupani Foundation is because so much emphasis is put on informed parenting.
Yes,
because when you empower the parents, then you're 10 years ahead in
yes.
terms of labeling kids. And sometimes even like in our cultures, a lot of times we feel like the struggle of our children or the labels they wear is a reflection of us.
Yes.
And especially moms,
yes.
given it's Mother's Day coming up.
Yes.
We wear so much guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's the opposite of empowerment.
Yeah.
Like, how do you expect your kid to be better off if you yourself carry such a heavy load of guilt and shame,
yeah,
and it trying to like minimize things. Whereas if you actually got in there, you know, yeah, like when Angelina was talking about her journey, I love that. I yeah love when you just kind of, you own it. Mm-hmm. And I remember this with my divorce. You know, mm-hmm, I was the first female in my family, like the first divorce, and being yeah Middle Eastern. And I'm very lucky, even though my dad's almost 90, he's a very like liberal, open-minded man. He said, if this was going to happen to anybody, I'm glad it happened to you, because you would know exactly what to do with it. Oh, and I was God like,
I love that.
I said, Baba, I waited years to tell you all the stuff that was not going right, and then here you tell me this.
Yeah. I waited you all this time.
and then I said, you know, like, okay, let me think about that. Mm-hmm. And I thought about all the labels, all the shame, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, if you're a Persian girl who's got kids, who's been divorced, nobody ever wants to look at you. Mm-hmm. Or like all these
yeah
really close-minded ideological restrictions.
Yeah.
Or you should kind of not really go and make yourself seen. You should just kind of hide away mm-hmm with your yeah dark secret. I said, well, how is that going to look to my kids?
Yeah.
Like, I'm raising a daughter, right?
Exactly.
I said, okay, looks like I'm going to be the poster child or the poster person.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's go out there and let's just own it, you know. And I remember I went to a fundraiser one night and they, like, looked around behind me as if, like, some man was supposed to, like,
yeah
be there with me. I said, no, I am in the registry. You should look up my name.
Yes.
Like, I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, and it started there, and I kind of, I believe with mental illness too, when someone's child has a label, I think instead of making excuses and trying to minimize the label, I think yeah we should get educated
yes
on our children's labels.
Absolutely.
And we should go to our mom's group and educate other moms.
Yes.
And we should teach our child how to get along with all the angles of what they're living with, like mm-hmm such as, you know, the ABA literature. Like mm-hmm there's ways you can intervene early with children and you can really like not make them become a statistic.
Yeah.
And I remember this conversation with my son and daughter. My son was 5 and my daughter was 8 and a half. And I said, we're going to have our first family meeting. And we sat down. We were not in our big house. We were in a little apartment. I said, these are the statistics that are going to be against us.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah,
that does not happen a lot.
Yeah.
No.
And I said, number one, the statistics say we are going to be poor because moms get impacted more after divorce. Mm-hmm. And then I explained to them why I didn't need that house, that in my mind, being rich meant that nobody could see your money, but yeah we could still go to Starbucks and get your brother's favorite snacks and not make a fuss, because I didn't want to be that mom to be like, well, because your yeah dad left me, now you can't have that croissant you always like.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So I said, these are the decisions I consciously made, even though our whole family may think we needed to be in our big house and our other life, but
yeah
we have to make decisions that work for us.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's why we're going to go to therapy, which a lot of Persian people
wow
don't believe in therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
it's non-existent.
And I'm like, trust me, the amount of money I've spent on therapy, I could have, I don't know, driven 2 Range Rovers right now. But I value your
yeah
mental
man
health.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want that fancy car or the fancy bracelet or whatever.
Yeah.
That's people's measure of success. Mm-hmm. But instead, I know I intervened in a timely manner to where 2 years post-divorce, I got you the best therapist, because I couldn't be your therapist.
That was good.
And I got my own therapist.
Yeah.
And
wow
so, and they understood that. And we would actually have budget meetings to speak to all those statistics.
Wow.
And we went through so much together. My son, his school thought that he had ADD, mm-hmm. and they wanted him on medications because he was acting out. And I had to become an advocate for him. And I said, you know, I'm not that mom that will be like, okay, no, not my kid, because I've been in the mental health business pretty much my whole adult life. Mm-hmm. But you are misdiagnosing him.
Yeah.
He may be depressed because in his mind, he can't keep up which Thursday, what Friday do I go to my mom's. You know, these are all new things that this poor five-year-old, because after our divorce decree was finalized, he said, Mom, so can we all go back to our house now? Mm-hmm. He thought these lawyers and all these people were just like some formality. And I said, sweetie, that is not how it's going to go moving forward. And now he's almost 14 and he literally functions like he can talk someone out of a bad mood. He's a mental health advocate. He's anti-bullying, you know, champion at his, like, he got the character award. He puts out fires between cousins and his own family member. And, but it was because somebody didn't dwell. Oh, this thing happened to you. Now you're a bad kid and you keep getting detention. Because he would be so distracted in his mind and so worried because he's so anxious. Like, well, you know, he's related to me. he would literally not, like, remember to flip the test paper over.
Oh.
So he would get, like, literally not get credit for half of his exam. So, yeah. That's why when Dr. Collins talks about when we treat children, we need to treat the entire family. We need to educate the entire family. And we shouldn't be scared. We should just roll up our sleeves. We live in the best country with so many resources and so many like educated people who love kids, who love working with kids, and who have the right tools. And we need to just tap into that. And if there's folks that can't afford it, then, like, you guys come in, you know, if we need to be here and educating people and creating avenues, then that's where we need to be.
Let's
because
that's
our investment.
Yeah, you know? I want to commend you because that is actually really amazing and really heartwarming to hear that you took the time out to pour into your children and to provide them with the resources to help them grow from a situation such as divorce. And what we don't talk about a lot is the different variations of trauma and how divorce is very traumatic for the parents, but also for the children as well. And so my dissertation actually is looking at young women who are considered to not be successful based off of statistics because of the way that they were brought up without their fathers in their lives. And I looked at a slew of women and wanted to see from their perspective and their lived experience of what was life like for you without having your father there physically or emotionally. And a lot of them were able to overcome it, which success is subjective, right? Like to whatever they decide that succession is for them. But they determined that there was triumph after trauma because they went through all of these things that a lot of children grow through in life. But then therapy was there as an intervention to help them. Their mom was there for the most part, or another person that was unbiased, whether it was their aunt or uncle, a safe person to help them navigate those really big feelings that, you know, nobody really talks about.
That's
and
true.
So with you being able to do that with your son, you built up his emotional intelligence to where for the moment, he went through those things, right? But like now as a teenager, he's able to navigate those feelings and do it in a healthy way, which is what I think a lot of people need and what I think this program is in place for, because, you know, I think Mr. Rupani is so great at focusing on the early developmental stages, right? That's the prevention method. But then you have so many kids, because he can't reach everybody. But you have so many kids that miss the mark because they don't have those parents who are educated and know, let me put my child in therapy or let me invest in therapy for myself. Because we understand that trauma, the cycle continues if you do not deal with it. And so now there's a preventative measure. But then when you don't have children who, you know, who get those options when those resources aren't available, we have the intervention methods, which now we can provide the therapy and we can provide the support and the resources and the community outreaches to help them get to a place. So it's never too late. It might be a different journey, but, you know, there's always some room for growth. So commend you for that. I think that is really great. We don't talk about that a lot in families. Like, and to have a sit down with your children and talk about, like,
budget.
Like, that is amazing. Good. Yeah. I was thinking about myself, like, did my mom and them do that to me?
I wish there was, like, an off switch where you could just turn off all the guilt, turn off all the I can't say the word on radio, but the, you know, the talking that people do behind everyone's back in, like, terms of, like, oh, she's a divorcee or she's a bad parent or, you know, it's always just looking and labeling people. I wish there was an off button that we could just turn off and be like, you know what? Stop. Like, let's just reset and let the parent do what they are doing for their child and just stop judging.
So
I wish there was
I remember even, you know, there's this sense of advocacy too, because I understand that not a lot of people have the awareness. That, I mean, I went to school for like 9 years on this stuff. So I'm like, I think in statistical significance and all these things. And I actually would tell my kids, you know, certain people, like, for example, we may run into, they're going to talk from a place of ignorance. And you have to forgive them. Because you don't have time to go take care of them and us. You know,
I
and
like
so
that.
you need to even educate people on, hey, this is how you should respond to me, or identify safe people. Like, you know, my brothers are just like my guardian angels, you know, they, I would not leave my kids with anybody but them. And, but they kind of knew the drill, you know, what my younger brother, he's like, well, he's not younger than me, but of the four, he's the younger one. It's like, you just, the way you talk to your kids, the way you treat them, like, cause structure is important, you know, being able to talk about feelings, like when a kid feels something, if they don't have the emotional intelligence or the vocabulary, they're going to act out that very negative feeling. So if they're going to, they're not going to sometimes feel safe at home to act it out. So they may go in, like, I don't know, recess and just go punch the next kid on the playground. And a teacher who's ill-informed or misinformed or whatever may just go straight to that conclusion of, oh, that's that problem child. But not take the time and care to say, you know, that was not that kid's baseline. I knew that kid in second grade and he was like the perfect student. And take on that curiosity. Like, I wonder what's going on.
Right. Or even that anger is a secondary emotion and that children respond from a different stimuli. And so if a child is expressing themselves in an aggressive way, that that is not a normal or typical behavior. So let me try to intervene. And I do understand, like, I have, I've worked with a lot of teachers and I know that they, their limits to working with, you know, kiddos is very limited, and because they are being more than one person, but there should be a lot of more support in the schools for emotional regulation, whether it's a counselor or a social worker or somebody in place. But just taking out that time to just kind of figure out what is going on, what's causing you to respond this way, you know?
Or taking, when I was in working in an inpatient setting, we had a high school for problem kids, right? The kids who would act out the most, I would actually make sure they got the most, like, kind interventions. It was like they needed that. For them to truly come to identify a core feeling rather than masking what they're feeling with anger and frustration. And sometimes anger, like in adolescence, means self-harm. It's anger towards self, not just aggression, right? Or anger, like object aggression, destroying things. Or in a more, like, more deep-rooted stuff, it's like destructive in the sense of, you know, I'm going to make sure I fail eighth grade. You know, let me be destructive in that sense. But it takes the adults to be not so black and white, to recognize these things.
Yes.
And it's teaching tolerance, and it's teaching the threshold. And how would you feel, like, if every adult you knew, I don't know, made a promise and never showed up for you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How would you feel if you, like, I had this one kiddo, I mean, we'll call her Susie. She didn't eat for days.
Wow.
I mean, days. So she learned to go, this was in LA County, rough, rough neighborhood. She learned how to be very resourceful. So when she was staying with us at the inpatient setting, she would kind of make deals and, like, sell sweater that her great-grandmother just sent her for, like, a bag of Cheetos, like, these things. And then the staff would, like, approach it in a punitive manner. And I'm like, okay, today for Susie's session, I'm meeting with the staff that works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I understand why she's doing the things she's doing.
Yeah.
We gotta figure out why you're doing the things you're doing.
Wow.
And then I had my own little tea station. I did it very lovingly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're still, like, we're so close still. That's such a good part of my life. 11 years I worked in that environment. But we turned the angle on, oh my God, now we need to get our clinical staff to be a major part of our training.
Mm-hmm.
When we hire new folks, we need to teach them why this is not just so black and white.
Yeah.
And how you can, how adolescence and childhood can be so fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have such a great impact, even if you can give them little spurts of positivity and empowerment. I mean, I get it. If you can't work in this environment, I got you. You know, you're 21. This is your first job. But still, like, while you're here, be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And this is why we need to approach this differently. Because otherwise, people look at mental health practitioners or people like me, like, she's such a softy. Mm. Everyone walks. I'm like, it is the opposite. You know, I can talk someone out of a crisis,
yeah,
like, as good as a, you know, FBI agent. You know, we kind of have the same training level on de-escalation. I've taught kids to, you know, restrain from doing really horrible things because I didn't fear them.
Yeah.
I tried to understand them. So when I caught them on a bad day, such as, like, when a kid's having a psychotic break or when they're coming off of a drug and they're super aggressive, you got to understand all these angles. A lot of parents nowadays, they don't know anything about what their kid is doing when they're in their devices. They don't know who they're talking to.
So scary.
So it's like created multiple personalities. Like, they have one version for mom, one version for teacher.
Yeah.
Curiosity. You look like you have to go on a break. You know?
So we're going to actually take a real quick break, and once we tune back, we'll continue our conversation on mental illness. You're listening to 99.5 FM. Thanks for tuning back in with your Chai Time Girls here on 99.5 FM. For those of you that have just tuned in, we are in conversation with Dr. Collins and Mehtab on mental illness, and it is Mental Illness Awareness Month, so we are going to continue with our topic. So how can we recognize a child dealing with mental illness, and what are the signs?
I think one of the first signs is significant change in social behavior.
Yeah.
And one thing to look out for is social withdrawal, and communication, the way they communicate. And in children, communication could mean what they say, or it could mean what they wear.
Yes.
Or who their new best friends are, right? So all these kind of subtle, even though we know that childhood is a very fluid time of life, there's still certain things that are baseline for our kids.
Yeah.
So getting to know our kids, and by that I mean, like, really getting to know them.
Yeah.
Not that on surface level. Mm-hmm. Well, my kid loves, I don't know, Nike shoes or this kind of food, but really how they're processing their emotions, how they're handling rejection.
Mm-hmm.
and where they stand with themselves. Like, and I'm not saying like, you know, be arrogant, but self-compassion. Self-compassion is so different than being self-centered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's that knowing yourself, knowing your pain points, and knowing your children's pain points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, those are all good. I think only thing that I would like to add is understanding mental health as a spectrum. And you have mental illness and then you have mental wellness. The same way that we look at physical health, right? We have physical illnesses and we have physical health that is or physical wellness, I should say. And there's not a one size fit all, but I think the symptoms that you identified, you can just look at a child and see like the way that they're learning, the way that they're picking up on things, the way that they're responding, the way that they are regulating their emotions, if they even have the tools to establish that. And then if you don't know as a person who is identifying or seeing those things, then of course, like, provide them with the resources, with somebody, a professional who can. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot. It's an array of behaviors and things that you can look at to see where it may not be bipolar. It may not be depression. It could be something from, you know, just like we mentioned earlier, trauma that they are experiencing at home. Yeah. I was actually working in the school a couple of years ago, and this kiddo was very, very aggressive with his behaviors. And something in me was like, this is not right. You know,
yeah.
Like, and the staff in the school had very low patience, very low tolerance. And then you would hear them yelling. And all that did was perpetuated the behaviors and it made it worse for this kiddo.
Yeah.
Well, they ended up bringing him to my office to talk because I was the clinician at the school. And to find out that he had just been yelled at by his grandfather, who was also physically abusing the grandmother.
Oh my God.
So you have all of these things that these children are going through before they even step foot on the schools. And then they have to deal with all of these other things. And so it's just knowing that there's something that's going on, right? It might not be so bad on the spectrum, but it's something that is affecting the way that this child is processing and not able to identify and regulate their emotions, that they need intervention.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Also, I also want to add, I know that sometimes in male adolescents, aggression is a sign of depression,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, culturally that looks stronger,
yeah.
on a male. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of adolescent females, they tend to do more like what we say attention seeking, mm-hmm. or self-harm. Mm-hmm. But if you're on this, like the care provider or as a parent or a family member, you never want to not take all these things seriously, despite where you think the child is,
right?
Because none of these things can be, it takes a while for the impulse control of part of our brain to develop.
Yeah.
So as adults, we need to make sure that we are kind of space holders until these kiddos get to a place where they can make more sound decisions for themselves.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's an inconvenient, you know, like you got to check in with your kid all the time, or you got to, I know it's a thing, mental health day, but it really should be a mental health day. Yeah. You know, if your kid just got bullied and, you know, they're showing every symptomatic. So somatic symptoms, mm-hmm. is a word that we use commonly in mental health practice, is when you have aches and pains and bodily complaints, but they're actually a mental issue for you. Like if you have anxiety, for example, a lot of folks wear their anxiety in their GI system, mm-hmm. or they get tension headaches. Mm-hmm. So even if you take time off to teach your kid, hey, let's do all these things to engage your non-fight or flight brain, because you know, it may be that we don't need to go to a doctor necessarily. We just need to like get you to calm down. Yeah. And what can I, like I always tell my kids, what could I do to facilitate? I don't want to do it for you because I'm not going to be around, right? So let me, you know, you let me, what do your five senses like?
Yeah.
What messages of calm work with smell for, you know, like my son's like, well, I just want one of those cozy, you know, Iranians love the stews and rice. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes he'll request that. I'm like, okay, that's a mom job. I'll get on it.
Yeah.
But what can we do if you just got bullied and you're just so stressed out about everything? What can you do? Do you want to go take a nap? Yeah. Do you want to go ride your bike? Maybe get some sun. And while I'm cooking this for you, do you want to do an Epsom salt bath? Does, you know, just kind of literally have the stress wash off of you? Yeah. You know, maybe he just took a bath that morning, but it doesn't matter. Like teaching kids how to engage their own calm, their source of
I
calm.
Really love that. Mm-hmm. It's so important. I'm like jotting down mental notes right now. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to keep on signs for all these things. And then these are the things I'm going to,
That's, I capture that in self-compassion. Yeah. Let me go do five things right now to disrupt my negative cycle. Mm-hmm. Like for me, it's, I love going to my favorite place and having a cup of tea.
I love that.
You know, I like a lavender lotion or like, you know, have like a long list of what does it mean to show myself love in very simple ways. Mm-hmm. And it signals my brain like, this makes me feel calm. Mm-hmm. Now, some of us grew up in, with different textures, right? So if you, let's say your baby blanket was, I don't know, Egyptian cotton, or you lived in a cold area of the U.S. and it was that Sherpa material, the fuzzy, your brain will want that material.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes you'll surprise yourself.
It's that comfort.
Yeah. And you'll pick, like... My daughter's like, why do you always pick these fuzzy looking weird things? And I'm like, I think it has to do with my early emotional mapping kind of brain, because I love that material. Because in the northwestern Iran where I grew up my first 7 years of life, it's a lot of wool. It's a lot of those products, right?
Oh, wow.
So it makes sense that I gravitate. Or the smell of naan, like fresh naan. Like, that will automatically put me in a fantastic mood. Wow. Because that's very common in where I grew up. Oh, or it kind of signals, oh, my grandfather just came in with a bunch of naan, and we're about to have honey and tea and butter. Wow. Like, it's, but that's something different for every kid, right?
Yeah.
So taking the time to both in earlier, the first 5 years, to create that, maybe you need to make sure your kid knows what a field of grass feels like on a bare foot. Maybe you shouldn't give him a hard time about taking off their shoes. Maybe it's good to, like, it's so funny.
Grounding.
My niece, I was like, get in the fountain, Roya. I'm going to take a picture. My niece at UT, when we were taking pictures, like, I want you to, like, that's a playfulness, you know, that's fun. And I said, I have, you know, things you can disinfect your feet right when we get in the car. But like teaching children how to just let go, even if it's a little bit, or taking a, you know, something fun like paint and throwing it on something, or going to these, I mean, I'm okay with these jumping world, but I wish they were outdoors.
Yeah.
But these are all ways we can build a relationship with our senses.
Yeah.
I love that.
And that's where we should go to that place. Yeah. Not let's have more, you know, let's learn to drink alcohol or, you know, numb our feelings by, I don't know, smoking different types of, like we shouldn't go there because those create new problems.
Yes. Yeah.
But let's go back to the basics.
Yeah.
Right.
It's creating a sense of safety, like the Maslow hierarchy of needs. We look for safety and belonging. And that when you were talking about the wool blanket, it it's so amazing how our brain remembers things. And yeah. So your brain is just remembering that sense of safety. And then now you're in a calming space. And I think that if we take a lot of time with creating those places of safety, then we're able to bring ourselves back to the root and kind of like get to that safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Are a lot of schools doing sensory rooms now?
I know a lot of schools in Aldine were when I was looking, because they have like a social emotional learning program.
Yeah.
I believe a lot of schools are adapting that.
Yeah, so things like this, we had a sensory room, you know, you could get like weighted blankets. These are traditionally ways to help with the autistic spectrum. But I think now they're like, my daughter, when she went to Disney World, she bought her brother I think it was an Eeyore, or like the stuffed animal with the weighted stuff.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it feels really good.
Yeah, my kids have that. Yeah.
But things like that, you know, and not judging, because these are all little special ways where we can find our calm. It's important to find your own peace and inner calm.
Yeah. So I have, sometimes I get real bad anxiety just out of nowhere. And my bestie right there, she gave me a technique, and she's just like, breathe in, you know, and then hold your breath for like a half a second, 1.5 seconds, and then let it go. And I've been doing that throughout the day, and just like a few times a day. And it really helps me, just calms my nerves.
Yeah.
And it's just out of nowhere, I'll just get like crazy. And it helps me. And I stay calm, and I'm just like, wow, I can, you know, like just everything just calms me. So,
yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
Because one of the disruptors of a negative thought cycle is call a friend that cares about you.
Yeah. I'm blessed.
That's actually
that.
A CBT.
So yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, we always pick up the phone and just like check in on each other every day and just make sure we're doing
what is
good.
It like, how are you? How are you?
How
like,
are you?
Really,
yeah, exactly.
Not
are
the,
you
not
good?
The surface. What you really ask, right? Yeah.
Do you want to know, or do you really want to know?
How much time?
Exactly. Yeah, so it's nice to have that. So what are some ways we can help children dealing with mental? Oh, we just talked about that. Are there any right or wrongs when dealing with a child who has a mental illness?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that there's a right way, because if we take a client-centered or person-centered approach, it can look very differently. But if I speak on the wrong ways, like, you don't want to ever make a person feel bad for having these symptoms and these experiences. So making sure whatever intervention you are using or whatever approach that you are using, that it is focused on the well-being of the person that you're working with. What that looks like could be very different. I don't know. I mean, you can use a certain technique, but every session that I've ever had has not been the same. It is a unique experience because everybody brings something to the table, that is very different. You have anything else you want to add to that?
I think checking in, you know, I remember with my kiddos, I worked with adolescents a lot. Just asking them, is this working?
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I being effective?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get in their buy-in.
Because sometimes they don't want to talk.
Yeah.
They've been talked at to, you know, down. And so sometimes we would like go for walks, or we would draw together. But we would say why we're doing that. Because I'm like, there will be a day where all these walls will just crumble, and you may have to have a 3-hour session with me, and I'll cancel the guy after you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. Mm-hmm. And if today you don't want to talk, it's okay too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll make you. So all my kiddos were drinking Persian tea by the time they
Tell me more.
And they knew I was playing backgammon. And I had this, you know, the cherry blossom.
Yeah. I
so
love it.
The boys, I said, we'll call him Johnny, you know, on his graduation. I'm like, sweetie, I can't really give you an expensive gift, because then it will kind of skew. And I explained to them the ethical things, that this is not a transactional relationship. I've been an emotional support for you So I can buy you, you know, a latte or some like a cookie, but not like a true graduation. I just want you to understand why I can't, because of the relationship we have. And he said, but can I just have the remaining of your cherry blossom lotion? Because every time I sit in here, you start the tea water and I put this lotion on and it like automatically is effective.
Oh, wow.
And so I went to Bath and Body Works and I'm like, hook me up. And apparently, all the therapy that I'm thinking I'm doing has been like summarized in this lotion.
It's like you said, going back to like things that, like the blanket and stuff. So for them, it's
because I would bring him in. I say, look, I know you think the whole world's against you, but let's just talk about what we say might work. You know, you sit down, you don't have to say anything. Mm-hmm. And it was, I loved my office had this full window and there was like a little green patch. So when it rained, it looked so, I don't know, I could have been a poet in that moment. I just love the ambiance of that office. And so we'd have tea, we had the lotion, I have the candle going.
Wow.
And I would never use the bright lights.
Yeah.
Because then that's what I need for my anxiety, you know? Because everyone's like, how do you stay so chill? Nothing phases you. I'm like, oh, I'm using everyone. You have no idea.
Like, check, check, check.
I'm on item 15 by 2 o'clock. So that's that lotion. I still remember that.
Wow.
Then he made me a CD because he never had a mom. He grew up on the street, and then he was awarded to the courts. That's why I love that gala. The Casas are pretty amazing people, and I worked with a lot of good ones. So he made it was a song, Bittersweet Destiny, and it talks about change. I could change.
Aww.
Because we pretty much had to build the foundation, like
aww.
Like a childhood he never got to have.
Yeah.
And already almost at 17, right?
Wow.
And then the world's asking him to be a good guy, make good decisions, don't get mad, don't, you know. It's like, well, what you put in his bucket.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we did a lot of that.
Wow.
And I couldn't be there the day he left because... Yeah. But I think a lot of these things can be done in schools, but we also need to support the people.
Yes, yes.
Who are helping our kids.
Yes.
And get to know each kid.
Yeah.
Just because they're angry doesn't mean they're after you. Like, we can't operate from a place of fear.
Yeah.
And I think some of that, I don't know, when you're a mom, it's installed in you. Like, you're just like, let me just get in there and do this.
Can I have a session with you?
I know. Yes. We could do breathing exercises with her. And her candles and all the other.
What is that? It's like that movie, You Had Me at Chai Chai. I'll have to bring some of that lotion.
I know. And a candle, and make sure you have tea with you. We
need to get the tea.
Yeah. We'll bring the tea, you bring the candle. You joining us next week, too? We'll have a little party on the radio.
But I just love that how you see the person for what they are, and you take out the labels, you know, and you're like, for each feeling that they're feeling, you're making sure that you give them that value, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, because we're so, like, even as moms, I think we're so easy to judge our own children, you know? You have two, and then one is doing, excelling, and one is, like, maybe struggling, and, like, look at your brother, what are you doing, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, not looking at, like, you're saying what they are going through. Each person has their own feelings and what their journey.
Yeah. You know, when we talked about, I think, I don't know which episode it was, maybe it was with Niloufar. It's like my kids and I do a lot of jigsaw puzzles, like 1,000 piece
jigsaw puzzles. Wow. And we have one around Christmas time, one that's kind of a spring theme, and one during the summer. And, you know, it would be one thing for me to say, puzzles are good for building attention span, and here's a 1,000-piece puzzle. Yeah. But I get in there, even at my age, and I obsess about it. Skip laundry, and I'll say, we're going to order pizza until this section is done, you know. But I, if you show that level of enthusiasm in, let's say, maybe unpacking an emotional trauma.
Yeah.
And then going and celebrating when you unpacked it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we could truly transform a young person. Mm-hmm. Because they're no longer going to look at a bad thing happening as this, like, detrimental thing. They're going to be like, ooh, I remember how I navigated this way and that way. And you know, in the end, like, what's the, my uncle always says, it's the first 100 years that's hard. But how you show up for yourself every day, if you smile, it'll be easier. If you have good friends, it's much easier. Mm-hmm. If you have a sense of humor, right? If you share your pain, that's, you know, I used the rice bag with one of my kiddos a few weeks ago. I said, you know, pain is how, if I got to, because we eat a lot of rice, like
a lot of rice.
20 pound bags, right? Yeah. So I used the, I made that a thing. I said, imagine you carrying this 20 pound bag of rice. And they live in this beautiful neighborhood. It's got these tracks and lakes and stuff. And my gosh, by the time you get to like the next street, you're exhausted. Yeah. But what if you meet like the third house down, the neighbor, and they're like, oh my gosh, you look like that thing looks heavy. Mm-hmm. Can I take 4 pounds off of you? Mm-hmm. And they take the 4 pounds. That. And then you walk together. Now you're talking.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, these people are, this guy is going through worse thing than I am. So you forget a little bit about what you're going through. Yeah. You got 4 pounds less on your shoulder. Then you go to the next person.
And take another.
And that's why social skills training is important. You're like, hey neighbor, how's it going?
Yes.
Why are you guys carrying rice? Can I help?
Yeah.
Then you give another 6 pounds to them. Maybe they work out. Maybe they can handle it. And you keep talking, and by the time you make it, you may actually forget what was upsetting you. And you're maybe left with like a pound of rice.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So I think that's the way I like to look at the world, because you may not have power over anything else in your life, but you can choose your outlook.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier. You said about the kid with, you know, they want him to be this happy, jovial person, in other words. But what did the world, what were the cards that he was dealt? Mm-hmm. And it made me think about how we all have 24 hours, but we do not have the same 24 hours. And your example with the bag of rice is so key in building relationships. So I talk a lot about like relational intelligence because we don't really do that either. We don't talk about that either. But just being a part of a community to help you lighten the load. Mm-hmm. In childhood, we learned to go from childhood to independence instead of childhood to connectedness. And if we are more focused on being connected than this person leaving out at 18 and just being in this independent world, like in what world? Well, maybe here, because that's that's the expectation. But it's not really conducive. Like at 18, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't have not all ready. Of those skills. I'm not ready to navigate this cruel world at the age of 18. Yeah. So if we build those skills early on and we build a sense of connectedness, that bag may not, it doesn't have to start at 20 pounds, you know? But if you do get though, if the cards are dealt and you do have that 20 pound bag and you're walking in a community and you're learning these different resources and the different people that's around you, and they take 4 pounds off and they take 5 pounds off and they take another pound off, then like you said, you at a point, you're realizing that the weight is not on my back anymore.
And mm-hmm. I don't have to go through this life alone. And it's not so hard because I have other people around me that maybe they don't get it exactly because they didn't go through what I went through, but they can empathize and they can put themselves mm-hmm. in my shoes and they can help me through it.
So, or they can be a fun story, distract.
It's a distraction. Yes.
And that's a good role too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that community. You know, we come from a collectivist kind of culture. Mm-hmm. In fact, for the longest time, I would mix up the I and the we. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, thank God I became an LMFT because you're constantly trying to create the we with couples. You know, I'm like, I think in we, I don't think in I. In fact, I'm trying to learn that because everyone's telling me you need to put yourself first. I'm like, well, that's kind of boring and lonely, but okay, I'll get to it. You know, when I have some time. But that community where you feel like, oh, you know, there's a lot of people that went through this. It's just not me. And then my old professor, Dr. Mize, she used to tell me, you know, have friends who are 10 years younger and 10 years older, and you'll always have life figured out. And I love that. Mm-hmm. That really stuck with me. Yeah. She's retired now, but, she, you know, I just love that.
That is amazing.
I replay that quite often because if you look at how far people have come, mm-hmm. then that's the journey for you to, you know, keep moving.
Yeah.
And then you can also encourage other people who are maybe not where you're at. Like, for example, we loop back to the divorce thing. You don't want to be having coffee with a woman who's divorced at the timeline as you are.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be, excuse me, like a shit show, right? Yeah. You want someone who's healed.
Yes.
Who can help you get through.
Yes. And then you better be good about being responsible for picking other people up, too.
Yes.
When you make those milestones. Mm-hmm. So, I love it.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow. Time is, she's like, nope, can't do it anymore. Sorry. This was so quick. Oh my God. I can go on for another hour or so. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining us here on Chai Time. This was a very interesting show, and I love having you. And you are an amazing addition.
Thank
so congratulations on your role at the Rupani Foundation, and congratulations on your new role at the Rupani Foundation. So hopefully we will see you guys very soon. Till next time, you are listening to 99.5 FM. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.